This podcast is sponsored by Bel Joyoso Cheese. Bel Joyoso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses, guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Joyoso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Joyoso, every cheese is a specialty. Hi, and welcome to Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie. Today on the pod, we're going to be talking about Kevin Hart's new plant-based restaurant, creative hiring solutions like Denny's latest push, and Starbucks' accusation against the National Labor Relations Board of election rigging. On Takeaway with Sam Okus, Sam spoke with Ricky Richardson of Eggs Up Grill about how he's setting up business to manage a volatile economy. And be sure to check out First Bite, our daily morning podcast where I dissect the top news of the day alongside an interim editor. And now it's time to introduce my co-hosts.
I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I am Leanne Zinsmeister, managing editor of NRN.
That intro only took about four times, but no one will ever know it.
No one will also know that we practiced this whole thing.
Except that we're talking about it.
We're honest.
We're just opening up ourselves and showing them the grind that is recording a podcast, the amount of work that goes into it, the blood, sweat, and tears. It's real business here, folks.
It's real business. I mean, we were nominated for an Eddie Award. It's real business.
That's right. We haven't told everybody about that, have we? That we are nominated for an award for Best Podcast, according to the Folio Eddie Awards, which is very exciting. So, hooray.
Yes. Yay. Our podcast, this podcast you're listening to. So, you're listening to an award-nominated podcast. We're a nominee.
Soon to be award winning. Soon to be award winning. Yep.
Put it out there. Put it out there and it'll all happen.
Hey, Holly, have you had any hot chicken lately? Sorry, I felt like a good segue.
You've been going to the Holly School of Segways, haven't you?
I figured I should turn the hosting duties over to myself, considering how our practice run. Holly was like very low energy, but I think we got it back up now. I think Holly, okay, Holly, we're feeling good.
I did a great job. I brought up our award nomination. I think I did a great job.
So far, so good. There's still time.
I think second time was a great.
Screw it up.
It was a great job.
We haven't heard the happy news jingle today, Holly. I mean, we have.
I'm going to save it for the end. I'm going to save it for the end as usual this time. The second time around, I'm going to save it for the end. Okay. Listeners, the first time we did recorded this podcast, I put it in the beginning, but I'm saving it for the end this
Stick
time.
Stick around to hear this week's happy news jingle.
What clearly happened is that you cursed us on the last one. You tried to move the happy news jingle up to the front. It was not to be so. We have to keep it in the back where it belongs.
We have to keep it in the back where it belongs. It needs to stay in the back. It's part of this, the flow. I messed up the flow and therefore I ruined everything. So I get it.
Story of our lives.
I ruined everything.
Yep. If we can deduce this all down to one thing, Holly ruins it all.
Pretty much. All right. So let's talk about the news.
Let's do it.
Great.
Let's do it. Energy. So let's talk about the first thing, which is Kevin Hart's new plant-based restaurant. Now, Sam, you wrote that story.
I did.
Yay.
Hooray.
Exciting.
Oh, thank you. You guys are giving me the kudos because I don't typically write stories anymore. It's not my, not exactly something I spend a lot of time doing these days. But you know what? Sometimes things pop up and I'm like, I'm going to grab that one. I'm going to take it. You have an opportunity to write about Kevin Hart. You take that.
Are you a Kevin Hart fan?
You know, I've liked him in the things he's been in that I've seen, I guess I'll put it that way. I don't like actively seek him out or things like that, but, I think he is very funny and very talented. Let's see I think I recently saw the Jumanji movie that he was in. I enjoyed that. So yeah, is probably safe to say that no, I'm not a huge Kevin Hart fan, but I respect him. I think he's great and he's talented.
Isn't he in those like dad movies where it's like a group of dads and they all have the kids and it's like a jokey movie?
Is that the one with Adam Sandler?
I think so.
I don't remember what it's called. Are you assuming because I'm a dad, I would watch that movie?
100%.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if I should be insulted or complimented, but thanks.
All right. Well, let's talk about the restaurant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, setting the stage just a little bit, the plant-based eating right now accounts for about $7.5 billion in revenue at the end of the year 2021, which is not a ton when you compare it to the $800 billion restaurant industry, but it's still sizable, still, I think, you know, worth paying attention to. Most importantly, paying attention to the trajectory of plant-based eating, because I think a lot of people, including the leadership at Heart House, really see plant-based eating becoming a lot more mainstream in the next 10 to 15 years. And so I, on one hand, it's easy to be cynical about a lot of this because as with a lot of food trends, things kind of come and go. A lot of people jump into things all at once. You know, just use the fast casual pizza category as an example of, we all thought, oh, fast casual pizza, the future of the pizza industry. Suddenly there's 100 brands trying to become the next big thing. Do you have a level of that with plant-based eating right now, where it's just sort of trend watching and trying to ride the waves with a trend? But of course, plant-based eating, much more than any other trend, I think, is kind of like also up here as far as, like, for the sake of the planet, for the sake of people's health, for the sake of supply chain, plant-based eating kind of has to be more popular. So if that's the trajectory, lots of brands jumping in, Heart House now being one of them. So, another player for a very populated space, but immediately has a lot of potential because of Kevin Hart.
It feels like these restaurants centered around celebrities are kind of a trend right now too, right? Like, there have been a lot of more, I feel like, not just marketing things, but like celebrities actually getting involved with the restaurants that they're starting or that they're the face of.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the easiest example, and it was funny because I spoke with Andy Hooper and Mike Salem, the CEO and head of culinary innovation, respectively, of Heart House. I spoke with them the same day I went to Big Chicken, which is Shaquille O'Neal's restaurant, which I believe I talked about on the podcast last week. And I saw some very similar, you know, there were some similarities between the two here, which is that Shaq is not just a face on his restaurant concept either. He's very actively involved in building the team and just making decisions about the menu, helping them vet franchisees. And I assume this is the case with Kevin Hart as well, but something I've talked about with Josh Helper and the CEO over at Big Chicken, Shaq's concept, is just how important it is for there's so many stakeholders in a restaurant company, and when a celebrity attaches their name to it, I mean, they have to make sure all of those various stakeholders are legit, because if they screw up, they're screwing up. It's going to be the celebrity who takes the fall. I mean, if somebody in Big Chicken screws this up, if a franchisee blows it, Shaq, unfortunately, that's a hit to his reputation, because suddenly it's in that franchisee's market, oh, Shaq's chicken restaurant is no good. And here's an example. So point being, I assume that's the case with Kevin Hart's concept as well, where he is very actively involved, as Andy and Mike shared with me. Similarly, he was active in the menu development. He's active in even training employees at the first store, because yeah, it's like you can license out your name, but if you want to make sure something's good, you have to make sure it's good. You have to be involved with it. And now, on one hand, Kevin Hart, to my knowledge, has no restaurant experience. But on the other hand, here's somebody who has hundreds of millions of social media followers, is a well-to-do guy. He's going to have resources to give to them if he's more involved. So yeah, it is interesting to watch more celebrities become more involved beyond simply putting their name in the title of the restaurant.
Well, and so what do you guys think of the larger plant-based movement? I mean, we've kind of talked about it, and you mentioned it a little bit, Sam, that it, you know, it's becoming this fad almost that we're seeing kind of blossom and become this thing that, you know, fast casual pizza was a few years ago. I mean, do you think that we're going to see a national franchise? It's a question we posed to readers a few weeks ago, that, you know, are we going to see a national franchise of plant-based
eating. We've never seen one before. And we had seen fast casual pizza. We've seen those franchisees. We've seen them grow. We've seen them blossom. We've seen them. We had Mod Pizza. We had Ant Pizza. We had Blaze. We had all these companies. We had Mod and Blaze vying for the top spot for years. I mean, what are we going to see come out of this battle? Who are we going to see win?
I mean, the holy grail in the plant-based movement right now is creating a product that will steal share from the burger concepts, right? Take me as an example. I love a good burger. I am a carnivore. I like meat. And I am not a fan of plant-based burgers. To me, I taste a difference, if not in flavor, in texture. There's a lot of ways in which I'm just like, this is not as good as a good burger, right? So the holy grail is to convince me otherwise, is to give me a burger, and I'm saying me in the sake of, as we've decided on this podcast, I am average Midwest American man, so here we are. But if you convince me to go eat a plant-based burger instead of that other real burger and not be able to tell the difference and even prefer the plant-based version, that's when this category wins. Because, you know, Andy pointed out on our call, 90% of Americans eat fast food monthly. It will surprise you how many people eat fast food daily. So the point being is that that's a behavior that's very hard to crack into. And so getting them to change their behaviors is the first step. So I think the concept that figures out how to change their behavior, is going to be the first one that is going to be able to scale nationally. Now, I will just say, as again, average Midwest male here on the call and also this podcast resident flyover country native, it doesn't have to come out of LA or New York because you guys create a hype train in New York. Let's just talk about Shake Shack for a little bit. It took a long time for Shake Shack to eventually grow nationally, right? A lot of things that come out of LA and New York, you can hype those things to death because you've got the media machines there. Is it going to work in Omaha? Is it going to work here in Columbus? Is it going to work, you know, like that? You have to create a concept. It's going to work everywhere if you're going to become the first national franchise of anything. So that's going to be the next step, which is how do we make sure, and Kevin Hart could be good or bad in that, because Kevin Hart on one hand is massively popular across the whole country. On the other hand, he's a Hollywood celebrity. So I don't know. I mean, I think Hart House is going to have a huge advantage in this. I don't know who else to put my money on, just because it's going to require somebody who figures out how to change the average American's mind about eating meat.
It's a very interesting just as a point. Reminder, I too am from Ohio.
Yeah, but you're different now. You've changed, Leanne. You've changed. You live in New York now.
How would you know? I've lived here for 8 years and I've known you for one.
I just know. I just have the sense.
But to answer the question, I do think that we're going to see a national plant-based fast food chain in the relatively near future, in the next couple of years. I don't have any guesses as to who it could be. I think Hart House is just as likely as any of the others. And we've talked about a lot of them lately at NRN. But I mean, you look at fast casual pizza today and it's just as ubiquitous as the QSRs. You know, there's hardly a town in America, I'm guessing, without a fast casual pizza restaurant right alongside the Papa John's and the Domino's. And I think that in a decade, it'll be similar with plant-based fast food alongside the burger restaurants.
But the counterpoint, I think the only devil's advocate thing to throw out there is, when you talk about pizza, the most beloved food, and they didn't – fast casual pizza changed the way you can order the pizza. You can customize it, get sure. a personal sized pizza. They didn't really change the flavor, like the actual makeup of the product, whereas plant-based is a little bit more of a stretch, I think, for people. So that's why I'm going to be fascinated to see if it can work, because I want it to work. I think for the sake of the planet, we need it to work. But it will just be interesting because, again, on the face of it, if you go to some person in the middle of the country who has a fast food eating habit and say, here's a plant-based version, I mean, your first hurdle is they're going to say, I don't even want that. Like, that's not what I eat. I'm not going to do that. I'm not trying to judge anybody here. I'm just trying to say, like, that's just not their eating habit, right? So that is the hurdle that plant-based eating has to overcome. So it's just going to be interesting to see if any of them actually crack into that.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be as ubiquitous as fast casual pizza, but I do think we'll get to a point where it won't be notable every time a fast food plant-based chain expands or opens.
Yes, you're right.
Well, Sam, I'm going to have to take you to Plant Burger when you come to New York next time, because their burgers are meant to be a little like sloppier, a little bit more like they're meant to be just like burgers. Like they're meant to be, they're obviously not real burgers, but they're meant to just be like, they're meant to just feel like fast food.
That's the goal, right?
And they really
yes, do. You have to create a product that is very perfectly mimicking fast food in order to get a non-vegan to choose to eat there, right? And look, I mean, you know, another way that this could work is Katie and I, my wife and I, we do Meatless Mondays, and like, you know, we're both carnivores, but we choose one day a week to not eat meat because for the good of the planet, et cetera, et cetera. Like that's another way in, right? Which is like, you can mimic fast food and come in and say, here's this, it's equal in flavor to those guys, but better for you in all these ways. Or you could say, you know what, if you have two burgers this week, make one of them plant-based. You know, like there are other ways to, I think, work into this, but it's got to start with a good product. And I hate the word craveable. Just FYI to all y'all who are going to ever be in an interview with me, I've heard that word a bazillion times. I think it means nothing. However, what I know people are trying to get at when they say craveable is that when you get a hankering for some good takeout and for some fast food, like that's what you're craving. Like I get it. And you have to be able to crave plant-based eating and not begrudgingly eat it because it's better for you.
Well, that's been a great discussion on plant-based eating. I mean, I think we really touched on all the points.
Now you know I'm opinionated on it. Yeah.
I'd say good job, guys. I'd say that was a really good job. You know,
thanks, Holly.
Thanks, Holly. For us.
Really needed your affirmation.
You know what? Agreed. Sometimes I know that you do. And I'm just going to say that. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Gee, thanks.
Okay, so next piece of news we have to talk about is Denny's latest hiring push, which is bring your bestie, not just friend, your bestie, to work with you to get a job at Denny's. What do you guys think of this latest inventive hiring push? I mean, we realize that it's hard for people to get workers. It's hard for companies to stay staffed. I mean, do you think that things like this are really going to help?
I mean, it is working at Denny's. This is a campaign from, I want to say, the spring. And it's something that worked for them. And I think that's great. I think that for, you know, the types of employees that most restaurants, but especially Denny's, is trying to hire are, you know, younger people, and the appeal of getting to still spend time with your friends while you're earning some pocket money for, you know, high school or college is appealing. And I say especially Denny's because, of course, the restaurants are designed to be open 24/7. And they've had some trouble getting back up to that because of staffing issues. So I don't think it's necessarily a campaign that would work for everybody, but I think in the family dining space and probably for QSRs, like, yeah, there's a draw to being able to have your friends with you in the workplace.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty traditional referral program that I think they've dressed up a lot in a way that's appealing, obviously, which is they're, you know, giving away a weekend getaway or something here. But I've heard a lot through the last year or so when the labor issue became very much a problem. A lot of companies have talked about how referrals are a key way to hire, because especially if you've got one or two like all-star employees on your team, it's a safe assumption that their friends are going to be of high quality as well. I don't know if you've been in a Chick-fil-A recently, but I just feel like every time I'm in a Chick-fil-A, I'm like, it's staffed by the honor roll of the local high school. Like, that's my impression of every Chick-fil-A I've ever been to, is like, these kids are like that high school's like cream of the crop, because you know, Chick-fil-A is a desirable place to work. And I think they do an excellent job of hiring and recruiting. I would not be surprised. I have no idea what Chick-fil-A does as far as referral programs, but you have to imagine they do that. I mean, I see camaraderie among Chick-fil-A employees when I'm there. So I'm like, I think these people are friends. I've known Chick-fil-A employees before who have worked with their friends. All of that is to say, it's a good strategy because, again, you're not only two birds, one stone. If you can get two employees for the not price of one, certainly, but you can get them with one hiring process, but also making them happier. We just did a Emerging Restaurateur Live Learning Series session on labor and specifically retention. If you haven't, if you didn't sit on that session, highly recommend nrn.com/live learning because we had some incredible industry voices sitting on that panel talking about their strategies for retention. And at the end of the day, it is keeping your employees happy. You might be surprised what keeps them happy. Money is not necessarily it. I mean, what I understood is a lot of people will take a job for money, but they stay at a job for a good boss, for a good hours, an opportunity to work. And then just, are they happy doing their work? So this is how you keep them happy doing their work is you try to get their friends to work with them. And again, at the end of the day, you're winning because you're getting another high quality employee.
I love the Chick-fil-A comparison. I didn't know that you've known Chick-fil-A employees.
Yeah, I have known Chick-fil-A employees, yeah. And yeah, I know that they worked at the same Chick-fil-A together as friends. So I'm a Chick-fil-A guy. You guys know this.
We do.
I mean, I have children. Of course I'm a Chick-fil-A guy, but I lived in the South.
Were you a Chick-fil-A guy before you had children?
I was, yes. I lived in the South. Of course, it's everywhere. It's on every block.
In my hometown, or where I went to high school in Texas, the local Chick-fil-A was owned by the father of a girl I went to school with. And I can absolutely confirm that everybody who worked at that Chick-fil-A was friends with Brooke.
There you go.
It's like a very Truth. Specific situation. But I imagine that even now we're in our 30s, but they're probably still staffing that Chick-fil-A with kids from our high school.
Were they on the honor roll?
Probably, yeah.
Look,
I didn't know them well, but yes.
Hey, and not to judge anybody not making honor roll, was an honor roll guy myself, no big deal. But, you know, it's not to say you have to have brains. You could just be a hard worker. But, you know, point being is that you need character, right? You need a high character person to be able to is who you would want to staff your restaurant. So whatever that looks like could be honor roll, could be other ways, but yeah.
Well, going from high character to low character, on to our next story.
What a segue.
Yikes.
Alleged low character, by the way. Alleged low character. We should be careful with this one.
Alleged low character. Starbucks is accusing the National Labor Relations Board of rigging union elections, which is a tenuous story. So Starbucks is accusing the NLRB of tampering with elections, specifically at this one St. Louis store, but broadly across the board. So they're actually asking for an investigation into this, which would effectively halt all union votes. And according to Joanna Fantozzi, who I interviewed for First Bite, she said that this would effectively stop the union movement in its tracks. And she thinks that this, if the investigation actually happens, that it could effectively stop the union movement at Starbucks forever, pretty much. So, I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's it's getting kind of messy here, right? I mean, there's just going to be a lot of he said, she said. I mean, this is a bold accusation, so I don't think Starbucks would make the accusation without some evidence, but it remains to be seen as to whether or not this is actually happening. I mean, you know, in reading about unionization efforts, not just at Starbucks, but more broadly today, I remember reading a piece out of the from the Times a couple of weeks ago, and it was talking about how, you know, unions are often started by people who they're very intentionally like, so they go get their MBA and then they go work at a Starbucks specifically with the intention to go like start a, a movement, right? Like there are players in the unionization efforts who it springs up intentionally, not just organically, I guess, is at the end of the day. And I think, so that's what Starbucks is accusing of there, being some players here who are doing this with, intentions of trying to fan the flames, I guess. But none of that surprises me. Again, like at the end of the day, like this is the history of unionization. This is kind of how it goes, right? And so Starbucks coming out with this accusation is just sort of one salvo in a what's going to be a protracted battle as they try to stop the momentum. But yeah, this will effectively really stop the momentum, at least for a while, if there becomes an investigation or anything like that. But I guess suffice it to say, like, if you thought the Starbucks unionization stuff was going to go away anytime soon, you thought wrong, because regardless of if this stops the more stores from unionizing, it's certainly going to inflame the passions of people who are either pro or con unionization at Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks has definitely established itself as anti-union during this whole thing. And this is just an extension, the next step in that. And, for every shot they fire against the NLRB, there's one for the other side to fire back. And I think it is just going to get more and more heated until something explodes on either side. And this could be it, or it could not. So there's nothing really to do here, in my opinion, but just like wait and see, watch it all unfold.
And it's going to be a tricky battle to watch unfold. I mean, it's going to be dirty too. I feel like it's going to be a pretty dirty battle.
It already is. Yeah, already I think is, it'll, yeah. And it'll only get more and more so.
All right, well, I feel like it's time for da 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 da. Happy news.
Wildly different than your first take earlier. But it's okay. I actually really like you changing that every week, so please do.
It's a fun surprise for us as much as our listeners.
So yesterday, I have happy news. I'll go first. So yesterday, I got to go to the opening of Dave's Hot Chicken in New York City. Super fun. Got to meet Bill Phelps, who I've never actually met in person before. He's super tall in real life. So that was a fun surprise. Sometimes you can't tell what people from their photos, how tall they're going to be. He was super, super tall.
You didn't see him at Create last year?
No, I was busy doing the podcast the whole time.
All right, fair. Yeah, he's a tall guy. Do you think people have the opposite reaction to me? Do you think people ever like see me and they're like, whoa, super short guy? I think people have that reaction to me.
Better that than, oh, you're exactly the height I thought you were.
What a weird reaction to have. Like, yep, exactly the height I expected you to be.
Sam is short, just as I thought.
What are you, 5'6"?
That's what my doctor says. I say 5'7". But what does my doctor know?
He only has several degrees.
That's what you think.
Oh, do you go to a doctor in a parking lot?
Is that not a doctor you're supposed to go to? Anyway, this is going off the rails. Continue.
That's how Dave's Hot Chicken actually got started, was in a parking lot. So that's actually how Dave's Hot Chicken got started, was in a parking lot.
Stop it.
As it happens, my doctor is Samuel L. Jackson, investor in the Dave's Hot Chicken.
No, that's really how it got started, was in a parking lot with $900. That's what Bill Phelps was telling me yesterday. It got started in a parking lot.
It is true.
So that was actually a perfect segue. What I was saying was that I ate the chicken for breakfast this morning, my leftover chicken for breakfast, because I like to eat leftovers cold for breakfast the next day. That's how I always judge food. Apparently, that's how Samuel L. Jackson judges food, too. And after he ate the chicken cold the next morning, he called Bill Phelps to invest. And I feel like me and Samuel L. Jackson are on the same page. So I really like that for me.
Well, at least you have that going for you, huh? You and Samuel L. Jackson have one thing in common.
I mean, it's a pretty big thing.
Oh, do we need to
do either of you
with
happy
our happy
news?
All right, well, I'll go. I'll say
sad news.
As it relates to food, my happy news is that my daughter started kindergarten today, which is big, you know, because transition in life, et cetera, et cetera, and getting her out of the house, et cetera, for the hours of 7:30 to 2:30 anyway. No. I think, Katie definitely did a little bit of like a happy dance after she was out the door. but we had Krispy Kreme for breakfast. We got donuts because donuts are her favorite. And then we're doing pancakes for dinner because that's her favorite dinner. Yeah.
It also Rewards. Seems like a really good idea to get her all sugared up before you send her off to become another adult's problem for a few hours.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. No qualms there.
Perfect.
Yes, just get her sugar high and then shoot her off. And get yourself a sugar high too, and then have a full day of meetings. It sounds great.
Yeah.
Everybody wins, especially those of us who are in meetings with you all day.
That's right, exactly.
I went to Shake Shack last night, not for any occasion or event, but because Shake Shack is delicious and it was nearby where I was last night anyway. And I had chicken bites and a sprinkle cookie milkshake, which is one of their summer LTOs that I'm really enjoying. So that's my happy news. Shake Shack is always a happy occasion, in my opinion.
By the way, that sprinkle cupcake milkshake, also a hit with my daughter. So yeah, it is a yummy milkshake.
I do think Mabel and I have a lot in common, actually.
Yeah.
Perhaps more
I think Mabel
than
and I have a lot in
common,
too.
I was
going to
say, I'm going to tell Mabel that, yeah. You have more in common with my colleague Leanne than my other colleague Holly has with famous actress Samuel L. Jackson.
That'll mean a lot.
I think
to her.
I have more in common with Mabel than Leanne has in common with Mabel.
Oh, let's hope not.
I win.
We knew that was going to be his answer, though.
Yep.
All right. Well, before we kick the horse, I forget what the
jump
phrase
the
was.
Shark. Oh my gosh, Holly!
Please don't kick any horses.
Don't. Only the dead ones. That's when you kick a dead horse. Yeah, but that's another idiom
you
for
beat
another
a dead
day.
Horse.
Beat a dead horse. Yeah.
Okay. Before we jump the shark,
it's too late.
I'm going to throw it over to Brett, who's interviewing the executive chef of Papa John's. So thank you, both of you, for joining me today.
Thanks, Holly.
Thank you, Holly.
This podcast is sponsored by Bel Joyoso Cheese. Bel Joyoso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses, guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Joyoso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Joyoso, every cheese is a specialty.
So, and it looks like we got all sorts of food here. What did you bring up?
So, these are the new Papa Bowls that just launched on Monday.
Yes.
So we have those three.
And they arrive in little pizza boxes.
Yes.
Even though they are not pizzas. They're bowls.
They're not pizzas. They're bowls. And what we found through testing, mm-hmm. specifically with the no contact delivery and
right.
third party partners, that some guests were requesting that the packaging be improved a bit.
So we got seals on it. Uh-huh.
So there's seals that we always do, but
right.
the bowl is actually here in a tray.
Gotcha.
With a sleeve.
Uh-huh. Look at that.
So this has been, we made this about 35, 40 minutes ago by the time we got here, and you can feel how...
still warm.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to eat some. Because I think that's why you brought them.
Yes, absolutely.
So it looks a little bit like a casserole.
You're right.
Or like a Chicago deep dish pizza.
Yeah, without the crust.
Without the crust. This, I'm guessing, is a low carbohydrate play. Is that the idea?
No, actually what it is we intentionally didn't do anything around better for you health, anything like that, just because you can build your own, you can choose your own. So there's no grains or, you know, pasta or anything in that. Not that we can't evolve there, but really it was around how do we build additional sales layers, but using pizza as still as that indulgent meal.
So we're not saying this is when you want to eat healthy at Papa John's.
No,
this is
not at all.
When you don't want to have pizza.
When you don't want to have pizza, but you want the pizza experience.
I mean, to me, that's the crust, but among other things, but I guess I'm not the only consumer. No. So which one do I have? I have the...
That is the veggie version.
The veggie version.
So, and then this is the chicken... I think like chicken Alfredo, the most popular one that was selling
of course.
During the test.
Yes.
Chicken Alfredo, and then this one's my favorite. This is the Italian meats, so think of like a works pizza.
Right. Yeah,
meatballs,
you got
meatballs, pepperoni,
all of that. So, how? Were you, like, instructed by Papa John's management to, like... Well, what were your marching orders when you were told to develop this?
Really, it's... So I've been here about a year and a half now.
Welcome.
And really the basis is how do we continue to innovate and push the innovation forward, but where can we go that's not just pizza? There's so many opportunities, I think, for... Papa John's is a brand specifically of layers that we don't have. We don't carry salads. We don't carry pasta. We don't carry anything like this.
Whoa.
We don't carry sandwiches. So what can we bring in to help round out the check, build some incrementality, and see where we can go? And this is really the first push outside of pizza innovation that we're going to have.
So you were told, do something, but not pizza.
Basically, we want to build transactions and sales. So how do we go do that?
Right. And so why did you decide to go the bowl approach?
Well, to me, it was a natural extension off of the pizza. It still provides pizza experience. I think you see what's out there from competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have some options similar to this, not exactly like this. And one of the key to me was how can, from an operations standpoint, with all of the pressures that we have.
You're understaffed. You have supply chain issues.
Absolutely.
Inflation, blah, 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 blah.
So how do we push things through faster but still providing great experience? So you don't have to manage the dough here. You just build the ingredients in the tray, run it through the oven. It's gone.
So this is sturdy. Oh, it's not plastic. It's a paper tray.
Paperboard. Yeah, it's paperboard.
Paperboard. Which means it doesn't melt in the oven.
Correct.
It will only catch on fire starting at 451 Fahrenheit, according to that book. the book Fahrenheit 451, which is about book burning. So you can just put it in the pizza oven.
Put it in the pizza oven.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And it also provides us, this is the new, like, actually, we're pretty excited about the packaging because we've got our new, some of the new visual ID here. That's coming out or is starting to roll out.
Papa John's, no apostrophe.
Yeah, no apostrophe. Just much cleaner.
Uh-huh.
And this provides us some opportunity long term for maybe some additional development and innovation, leveraging some trays. Gives us just a little bit different than just a pizza box all the time.
Did you already have these kind of paper board? What do you call them? Paper boards?
Paper board. Nothing. Nothing like it at all.
So how did you get them? Because nobody's manufacturing anything anymore.
We know.
Exactly.
So we had been working on the development. Actually, when they originally started, they were in the, think of the, like the Italian aluminum.
Right.
Like takeout containers.
Right. That we would that I get my meatball parmesan, right, exactly. Whatever.
So we started out with that. And what we were finding was that one, it was they were a little bit difficult to manage. If you're not used to managing those and putting the lid on and crimping it down and doing all that, it can be tough.
It's annoying.
Mm-hmm. And also delivery, we were finding that, you know, it it was sloshing a little bit, so we tasked out to find what can we find here.
And so it just slides right in here. There's no lid, or the cardboard is the lid. The
cardboard's a lid.
It's, you pull it out.
Nice and snug.
And 45 minutes ago, old, and it is at eating temperature, basically. Absolutely. If I'm fussy, I could pop it into the oven or the microwave.
These are microwavable, too.
Sure, paper.
Yeah.
It's another benefit to not having it be in the aluminum thing.
Absolutely.
And so we have a vegetable, we have an Alfredo, and we have a meat lover, olive.
Like a works. Think about right. A works pizza.
But you call it an Italian?
We call it an Italian trio.
Italian trio. Yeah, it's the works. It's right. the meat.
Right. Meatballs, and Alfredo. Pepperoni, pizza sauce, veggies.
And the Alfredo's chicken cream sauce.
Right, chicken cream sauce, yeah.
And then I'm eating vegetables, which have peppers veggies. And onions and stuff.
Mushrooms, spinach. We did the banana peppers as a nice little touch to our pepperoncini that we use. Just to give it a little bit different, not just your normal pizza veggies, but something a little bit different. Bring a little zing in there. And then we also have a choose your own. So originally when we were testing this, we did not have a build your own.
Interesting.
And the consumer within a few days was like, we would like a build your own. And actually has become, it has worked very well because now guests can get, maybe I want buffalo chicken, maybe I want, you know, so it's all, anything you can get on a pizza, you can get in a bowl.
Well, you're all accustomed to doing that anyway at restaurants.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny, a few years ago, before the pandemic, somebody from Europe interviewed me about, you know, all of the new fast casual pizza chains and how they're customizable, and he asked, aren't all pizzas customizable?
Pretty good.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. European. Yes, all pizzas are customizable. That's their thing. So can you talk me through the process of developing this? They said, not pizza. Do it. Go, Scott.
So we worked, this is basically about a year to 18 months. The packaging was the biggest lift, meaning we went through multiple iterations of different style of packaging. What we actually did was we actually discovered a packaging similar to this, not the same. Mega grocery stores, like the mashed potatoes that you can just pull out and microwave.
Uh-huh.
So we saw that and we went, if they've got something, maybe we can. So we were actually going to grocery stores in the food aisle, kind of looking like what is out there that we can leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And we found something very, very similar to this. It was actually plastic. We did not want plastic. So
bad for ovens,
mm-hmm. bad for everything.
Yeah. That too. Yeah. The environment. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we found this paperboard, and ultimately, you know, it worked out really well now, but this was supposed to launch in February and delayed because of the paperboard literally just did not show up, and everyone's waiting for the, and so we had to delay. It's an entry point of $7.99, and it's launched this week. And mm-hmm. what better time to come in with something a little bit of a better price point than right now?
Right.
And that's not the intent. Was never the intent, but it just happened to work out that way, and so we feel really good about it.
Yeah, that's good timing. And yeah, and everyone's reporting on how obviously. The lower-income customer in particular is pulling back.
Right.
And that's probably a fairly large segment of the pizza population, not just Papa John's, but all of them.
Absolutely.
So they're pulling back, and you say, here you go. It starts at $8.
Right.
And if for whatever reason you don't want a crust, whatever it might be, here you go.
We've got it for you.
And did you try a bunch of different iterations? I mean,
we have about 10 that we end up. We only went to test with these three, but we had about 10 we were working on. You know, did the normal consumer insights, did some screenings. These were the three that stood out the most. Shocker, right? Yeah. Veggie, meats, and chicken Alfredo.
Right, exactly.
But what was good is that we got a lot of great feedback and intel on where can we go now. What's the next round of these?
So are you allowed to tell me what some of the runners up are?
Well, one was we've been working on some plant-based versions.
Sure.
So That is it's almost a natural, like a duh, you know, right. extension off of this. Not quite there yet. There's some fine tuning that needs to be done. We like it as there could be some fun with some LTOs or promos, whether it's, you know, if you do maybe we do a pizza and a pizza bowl of barbecue, buffalo chicken, something like you said, like a casserole, you can have a lot of fun with it. Our meatballs are delicious. So there's a lot of things you can do. Meatball parm. We've even cooked boneless wings in here and did like a chicken parm version. So a lot of fun, you know, things that need to be fine tuned, but we've got a few in our back pocket.
And obviously seasonal ones, you can do an orange and black one for Halloween. Turkey tetrazzini right. coming up for Thanksgiving.
There's a lot of fun we can have with it. A lot of fun.
Ham for Thanksgiving. Or for Christmas.
Or for Easter.
Yeah. So many options. And so you've been with Papa John's for a year and a half?
Year and a half.
Where were you before?
BJ's Brewhouse.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in the chain restaurant corporate chef development world for a while?
I was 11 years at BJ's, same position essentially. Worked my way up over the years, but was there. I was with Original Roadhouse Grill before that. Same style position.
Was that your dream growing up, that you wanted to be a chain restaurant corporate chef?
No, not at all. I enjoyed cooking. I enjoy cooking. I've enjoyed cooking very much. I was actually getting ready to go to the police academy to be a police officer.
Where'd you grow up?
In Southern California. So very close. Wanted to be a CHP, highway patrol my whole life. Was cooking in a restaurant.
Like Eric Estrada.
My dad looks exactly like Eric Estrada, which is a funny side story. But I was cooking in the restaurant. I had a great mentor.
Cooking just like I got to make ends meet. I'm going to...
I was in high school and prepping on the weekends and busing at night. And they would pull me on the line. You know, one of those managers that just... Longtime casual dining manager that was just... And was like, you've got a talent for this. Like, I think you should poo-poo that and you should go this way. And so I ended up going to Johnson & Wales. And, I mean, have been doing it ever since. Love it. My wife's a chef. So, you know, we've got a family full of food service folks that run around, daughters that work in food service as well. And, I mean, there's nothing better. There's nothing better than doing this. Didn't think totally. I would end up on this path. You think I'm going to go here, but...
Yeah, you think I'm going to go stage in Europe, right. And then I'm going to work at a pretentious restaurant right. in a big city. Well, I mean, was that sort of where you wanted to go?
You know, it was like, honestly, when I was doing it, my roommate in college, he wanted to do cruise ships. And he's like, I've been doing these cruise ships things. Like, you would love it. You would kill it. And I'm like, okay. And I was working, you know, just at a local restaurant in Providence. And we're just having fun with it. And again, one of my mentors put his arm around me and said, you know the way to go. Is corporate restaurants. You can actually have a life. Mm-hmm. You're not, he goes, Scott, you would get so frustrated if you're, you know, peeling potatoes for the next 10 years in some basement, you know. But he said, you know, you've got a knack for it. You have a management degree also. Like you could go that way. And so I went that way and here I am.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you could work yourself to death.
Right.
14 hours a day. Not make a lot of money, not see anybody, not do anything on holidays except right. work. Or you could work 9 to 5-ish right. and
have all the fun of still creating right. and running, having a team, having a great team, and you know, and get to do fun things like this.
Without having customers in the dining room being all
right.
customary. And,
that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, like, and I've heard, I mean, I hear mixed things, but especially over the past couple of years, customers have become even more, like, petulant and unreasonable.
Yes.
And it's
my oldest daughter is a server and a bartender at Longhorn, and she comes home to tell me stories. I was a server and a bartender, too, back in the day, and
sure.
she tells me stories, and I'm like, it has really gotten worse. Like, it has really gotten worse.
Yeah, I mean... I think what it is all of us have more static in our lives. We have less of a polite filter, less emotional energy to be gracious to people. Right. And if you take that tension out on work colleagues, loved ones, friends, you will get pushback. Mm-hmm. So you take it out on hospitality workers.
Right.
Ooh.
It's rough out there.
Yeah. It's rough. Yeah, and then you guys have to deal, though even you don't have to deal with the customers on a day-to-day, you get their feedback, of course, right. And analyze it and whatever, but you, of course, have cost management issues and supply chain issues like we've never seen before. So this yeah, was absolutely. These were supposed to come out in February, and they came out in August.
Now, August, yeah, 18th.
So that's, yeah, I mean... I keep thinking we need to report more on how to deal with supply chain issues, except the answer always seems to be, well, they keep changing,
yeah,
and you just have to move fast or, you know, adjust quickly. I was going to say yeah. pivot, but I hate that word.
Yeah, no, it's adapting. It's ever, ever adapting. And I think the good thing that has come out of this is the ego chef R&D person has got to go away. And you have to have the ability to compromise and adapt during development. And I did a talk at the RCA about that, and I just said it's like...
That's the Research Chefs Association.
Right, right. Yep. And it was all about, you know, what have you guys done? And it's like, it's really about adapting and being flexible and having a little bit of graciousness and being able to say, okay, I understand you're having an issue. How does that impact me? And what can we do to work together? And a lot of that, we all know, has gone by the wayside. It's people get upset, people get frustrated, and it's all about, you know, how you handle those personal relationships. And so we've been successful with that. I hats off to our supply chain team. I don't know how the hell they've done it, but they have kept everything in, locked and loaded. You know, a few little hiccups here and there, some things delayed, but overall, they've done a tremendous job.
And how many Papa John's locations are there? 10 million?
I wish. I wish. There's 4,000-ish here in domestically. He's got the numbers.
It's okay. I don't need the exact numbers. We're fine.
Yeah. There's about 450 corporate, and then the rest are franchise. Here in the U.S., about 3,200-ish or so, right. give or take.
Right. And you have to figure out how to get everything to everybody.
Correct. So we run through things through our QCCs, which is figure like commissary. Like mm-hmm. That's the easiest way to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So that has actually, I think, benefited us because we can control the flow of the products through the system. We're not relying on a third-party delivery, you know, vendor to come in. I think the only thing that comes in the back door is Pepsi. That's not through us.
So the products that you have spec'd come into the QCC.
Correct.
And how many of those are there?
13. Mm-hmm. 13 around the country.
Okay, but I imagine that sometimes different stuff arrives at different QCCs, all according to spec, but this one is on this side of the spec, this one's on the other side.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so do you have to, like, develop different recipes or
no, steps? So what we do is our QA team, mm-hmm. one of the strongest QA teams around, in my opinion, when we build the spec, we build the range, whatever that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we do is that they will test it and we will test it in mm-hmm. our test kitchen and then in their lab. And we find, okay, we're even if it's at the high end of the spec, this is the worst and best it's going to be. The low end of the spec, this is the worst and best it's going to be. And if it falls out of that, then we build the materials, training materials, and rollout materials to say, if you're here or you're seeing this color as an example, it's out of spec.
And you will not deliver that pizza.
And we will not deliver that pizza.
Or bowl.
Or bowl or chicken wing or whatever it is. And then we have a system that they can enter in, hey, help me, kind of, you know, put the bat signal up and... then we can investigate.
And figure out what exactly the issue is.
What exactly the issue is.
So it's been busy lately.
It's been very busy. Very busy. Very busy. But it's gotten a lot better. It's gotten tremendously better.
Is that because it's better or because you guys have gotten better?
Probably both. I think our stores and the team members, they're hyper aware of what's out there. So they're very focused on what's coming in through the back door. We have checks at our QCC. Our QA checks every lot that's run. So every product that's run, they get cases that come into the system and we check them. So they can usually identify something before it generally even gets all the way out there. It may be on a truck, but they can usually, you know, say, hey, wait a minute, we need to put a hold on that because we gotta dive in here a little bit deeper, and then we can get together and, you know, figure out what's going on.
So what kind of things maybe can we expect in the near future coming out of Papa John's that you won't get fired for telling me?
Well, one thing we're doing this weekend, just for fun. It's not going to be in any stores. This is just a fun little pop-up.
Okay.
You're one of the first to taste this.
Oh, boy. That's exciting for me. I know I sounded sarcastic when I said that, but I meant it. That is exciting.
So this
looks
is,
like a pizza.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what we're calling Dragon Flame Pizza.
Dragon Flame Pizza.
We're having a little fun with the in conjunction with the premiere of the new HBO
Game of Thrones. Prequel.
Not affiliated in any way, but now, we're having a little fun with it.
You are celebrating a
cultural moment.
Thank you. Very good.
So
with the Dragon Flame.
So we've been we developed this, and it's pizza sauce based, obviously.
You know, there's
dry sriracha.
Okay, dry, so sriracha powder.
Sriracha powder.
Uh-huh.
Smoked chicken. Italian sausage, green peppers, fresh Fresno chilies, and then we drizzled a little bit of that chili crunch on top.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a nice kick to it, but it's not overwhelmingly hot. It's got a little burn, but it mellows out.
So you're just bringing this to people like me and stuff like that.
We are, and then Sunday morning in King's Landing Park outside of Orlando.
Is that an actual name?
That's the actual name of a park.
They didn't, is that a new name?
No,
or it's always
no, it's
been
always
King's
been,
Landing?
Always been King's Landing.
How lucky for them.
I know. So we're doing a pop-up.
Just stumbled across it.
Yeah. That's neat.
We're doing a little pop-up, and we're going to be serving slices to guests. And
Dragon Flame Pizza. That's exciting.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. I think you've answered all my questions.
All right.
Good job.
Anything else?
Where are you eating while you're in New York?
I've eaten a lot of pizza because y'all have the best pizza.
We do have good pizza here.
We do have really good pizza.
Yeah.
Where did Le Cuckoo?
Le Cuckoo.
Oh, my Lord. I have not had a meal like that in probably, were you able to sit down and really enjoy a meal? Probably 3 years. It was unbelievable.
That's a good one to get into. It's hard.
It was unbelievable. And we went to Epion, this little kind of...
Empeyon.
There you go.
Yeah, or Empeyon, because it's Mexican.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alex Stupak's place.
Wow.
You went to the fancy one in Midtown?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a cool place.
I mean, they're just the salsa array and the guacamole and everything was executed at such a high level. And then we've been cruising around, eating different slice shops and checking everything else. We got a couple newbies, meaning never been to New York City before.
Oh,
so we've been trying to show them
how adorable,
right? Of course, had to take them to Times Square, take their picture.
Sure.
You know, so I'm like, okay, you've been here. Let's get out of here.
Yes,
let's get the hell out of here. Let's keep moving. We've had fun. I don't know where we're going tonight. We're driving to Orlando tomorrow. So
driving.
Yes.
I mean, your flight's not going to get canceled, so that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Because you've got the car.
We have, yeah. So
the
we
car
have a
can
lot
break.
Of, we have a lot of supplies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we were doing some test FedEx and flying runs, and it was not working out real well to get it up here. So we said, you know what? The easiest way to make sure it gets there is...
To carry it.
So.
Are you doing it in one day?
No, probably not Orlando. We drove from Atlanta here, and we stopped probably it was Maryland or Northern Virginia and states. So we were only a few hours outside of the city.
Have some crabs.
We had some good food there too.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But Orlando, we'll probably try to get like a good 12 hours in tomorrow and then coast in on Friday. So we're not.
Well, yeah. Why?
Why?
Take 2 days.
Yeah.
You're worth it.
Yeah. And it's not till Sunday. So we have a little bit of time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right, I forgot. You're going to King's Landing.
Yeah.
To serve,
King's Landing to serve Dragon Flame pizza.
Dragon Flame pizza. That's pretty hardcore. Exciting. Well, it's great to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Big fan of your podcast.
Thank you. I'll try to keep doing them.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
And great. Yeah. You made good choices where you ate. And yes. I appreciate your coming up.
What? Oh, Gallo. We went to Gallo, right?
Gallo.
Gallo Bar.
Gallo Green.
Gallo Green Rooftop.
McCormick.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool little place.
Sure. Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know every restaurant in New York City.
Why not?
Because I have to cover the whole country. That's why.